Hello and welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay, a queer exploration typically of Pretty Little Liars. Today we're going to be talking about teenage bounty hunters. This is one of your hosts, LCO123, aka Vina. And if things sound a little bit different today, you will notice that my regular co-host Joanna is not here. She was wandering around a graveyard and she found this like old-timey picture of herself. So now I think she needs to save a girl on the bus. I don't know. We didn't ever watch Ravenswood. So, but I am very, very lucky to have a guest joining me here today. Please welcome everybody, Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. Hello, everyone. It's great to be on this podcast, my first ever podcast.
Yes, everybody be very nice. This is a first podcast appearance. Jamie, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, your relationship to teenage bounty hunters, to the fandom, whatever you want to share?
Yeah, so like I said, my name's Jamie. I use she, her pronouns. I just graduated college in May, which is really exciting, where I majored in English. But I actually found teenage bounty hunters in the height of quarantine. I think I watched the show, of course, binged it all in like 2 days, right after it had actually gotten canceled. The news had gotten canceled. Mm-hmm. So I think had a little bit of a different experience than a lot of people in this fandom, because I wasn't expecting anything more, which is obviously really devastating. But so I watched it in 2 days, and then right around, this was in the fall of 2020, and my school had gone online for classes, so I was kind of in a weird mental space. And then, of course, there was the 2020 U.S. elections, which, you know, we all, how that went and everything. And I live in, not in the South, but in a pretty conservative rural area, and I just felt really drawn to this story and these characters and how there was such like a sense of hope within the fandom and the story that was being told, not only by the writers and the producer, but also the characters and the actors.
Mm, yeah, that's really well said. I agree. There was a sense of hopefulness and this sort of like little engine that could kind of element of the fandom just being so small and really supportive and that sort of thing. I think I've shared this story on the podcast before, but as is often the case, Joanna started the show and then told me about it. And then I watched it before she had a chance to finish it, which is like how most of our watching goes. And so she told me about it, and it was a very like Mad Libs of like what I knew about it. Like I knew that it was Southern and Christian, and that somebody was going to get gay, and that it was going to happen in episode 6, and I knew nothing else. And so I watched it, and I watched it also all, I think, in one day. I was homesick from work, and I came home. I remember it was a really hot day, and I came home and I was like, I just need something to be absorbed in. I feel so crappy. And I watched it all day. Couldn't stop watching it. And yeah, was delighted, you know, was playing the like who's gonna be gay game through the whole first several episodes. And I did not predict it to go the way that it did, but I was so glad that it did. Did you think Blair was gay? Because I definitely thought that she was. Or did you already know? Did you know going in what the twist was gonna be?
I didn't know.
Okay.
But my instinct was to go more towards Blair, you know, like the lacrosse jersey, her general, you know, but something, I don't know. I grew up, my family was pretty involved in Christianity and Catholicism growing up. So I don't know if it was just my gut instinct, but I knew something was up with Sterling.
Okay. Very cool.
That first scene in the car when her and Luke are hooking up. And then it just pans out of the shot, and you see they're right in front of their school, their private Christian school. Yeah. I was like, one, this is hilarious. And two, I just, something resonated so deeply with, like, within my core and, like, related to Sterling that I knew something was up with her. I knew, I didn't know what it was, but there was going to be an important character arc for her within the season.
That's really interesting. Were there elements of this, the sort of way that religion was treated in the show that, that resonated for you?
Yeah, I definitely, classic April. I think it's really, I don't know, I definitely, like I said before, the town that I grew up in and where my parents live, is pretty socially conservative. And the church that I grew up going to was also, it wasn't conservative, but it wasn't accepting, if that makes sense.
Okay, totally makes sense.
So maybe not as bad as like Georgia, but I definitely, I also lived, my family lived in Texas, right outside of Houston for years until I was 7 or 8. So I definitely could relate to a lot of the elements that were being presented in the show.
Sure. That so I'm the resident agnostic West Coast Jew on this podcast. So like I connected so much with the show, but it's been really interesting for me to hear people talk about connecting to the show from a standpoint of the religious elements or relating to, you know, the conservative nature of the community, because I can't relate on that aspect, but I can imagine that that just adds so much to your connection with the show and the characters, and really is something that I think the Teenage Bounty Hunters explored some of those nuances in a way that is pretty unusual, I would say, especially from like a teen girl point of view.
Yeah, I think it really actually, the themes of religion, Christianity, and like conservatism in the South really juxtapose well with at least April and Sterling's, like, not only relationship, but their characters in general, because there's a level of, I don't want to say desperateness, but everything is elevated on the same plane, because like you have these two characters who obviously were great friends and then drifted apart for whatever reason, and then, but they're so attuned to each other still after all these years, and they're so, no one is doing it like them. if Sterling and April, I would argue, are on the same level, and then several steps below them is Blair, and then several steps below them is like the general population of their community. And I think that pairs really well with the urgentness of not only being in a religious community in the South, but growing up queer in that community and navigating that space, and making sure your life that you're living isn't just like, oh, it'll be fine when we get out of high school, when we move away, but what are those ways that you can still preserve your happiness and still preserve your life within these communities when you're living in them?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. And yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that is so, feels so unique about both characters, actually, I would say, is that April has known and accepted within herself that she's gay for so long, but is like very pragmatic about the fact that she can't come out. And then Sterling has a journey with her sexuality that I'm not sure that I've really ever seen before in a teenager, of like discovering this new thing about themselves and not only being excited about the person that she's into, but like being excited about this revelation, like treating it as like, this is new information about myself and that's exciting. And I'm like interested to learn more about myself, which I think is really cool. And it, so many of these narratives that we're used to are really rooted in a lot of teen angst, which is, you know, warranted. But it's, I don't know. I enjoy the unique take that they took on these characters. And maybe we can kind of like segue that into talking a little bit about my very long list of like what appeals to us about Stepbrawl. I mean, we live in a time where there's a lot of queer representation on TV, the good, the bad, the ugly. What is it about Sterling and April that captured your heart? Because they captured my heart in a way I did not expect.
I agree. I think definitely, I don't know if anyone else experiences this, but I definitely grew up with the representation that like there was, you kind of pick and choose which ships to like really latch onto. And I think the first ship for me was Carmilla.
I loved Carmilla. Yeah.
Yeah. And really unfortunate that people like hate on it now, because like, say what you want about the budget but it was very good for the time. And I would argue still very good now and has this timelessness, but Teenage Bounty Hunters was another show that just like didn't just like grab me by the shoulders, but like ran over me with like Blair and Sterling's like bad driving skills from like episode 1. And I think that's mostly a large part was like the humor of the show. And I think there's a lot of discussion and merit on how to write teenage characters accurately within like dialogue, but also just like the way they are and the dynamic between Sterling and Blair, like as sisters, like was just like unparalleled to me, something I'd never seen before. And I think that was one of the core, I think if no one had ended up being gay, or like you had to like read through the lines a little bit more to like squint and like to see if April was queer, I think I would still watch it, just because like there's this comfortability and this reliability and like this familiarness that I felt with all of these characters. And that could just be like, you know, me like in my situation growing up queer in the South. Like I can't remember what episode this is, but I want to believe it's after they've gotten together. And April and Sterling are in the fellowship room and their pinkies touch or like around. And I don't know who wrote that line, but I have a bone to pick with them, because that like to the T exact, like moment happened with like me and like one of my like girlfriends when I was 16 and when we were in church youth. Like I distinctly remember holding her hand under the table and as we talked about how you know, like gay people were going to hell and why like a Christian marriage is the right marriage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow. So they ripped a detail from your life there.
Yeah, I was like, wow, is this my autobiography?
That's incredible. Yeah. So just funny side note anecdote that you brought up, Carmilla, which is like, that was, I have not thought about that show in a long time. So that was a little blast from the past moment. I remember that for some reason, the timing of it was that I finished the first season of Carmilla the same day I finished The L Word. And so that was like a very interesting, like, juxtaposition of like different queer medias that particular day. Just remembered. I think that it is very high praise to say you'd watch a show even without the gay stuff. And I agree. I think I would too. I specifically with Sterling and April, like they're just a grab bag of so many good tropes. You know, the friends to enemies to lovers, the rivals to lovers, the childhood friends who have, you know, broken up and kind of gotten back together. And not only are they a grab bag of those tropes, but there are those tropes done really well. Because certainly there are there's a lot of media that is tropey, and like that's as bad, about as deep as it goes. I think that there is something so powerful, and we talk about this when we talk about Pretty Little Liars a lot, about like two people who know each other in a way that nobody else knows them and are also still constantly surprising one another. And I think that that's a really fun element of their dynamic. Both of them have a lot of agency in the way that the story is told, which I appreciate. I think, and we, Joanna and I, like, have spent so much time geeking out on this line, but the "was this always here and just paralyzed" is, like, I love that element of their relationship, that it's this kind of, like, maybe this was here all along, and, like, it was always there. It was just sort of like waiting to be activated. You know, it was like this, which makes it sound like a parasite. I realize I don't make it want it to sound that way. But like, it's like something that is, you know, dormant, and then something strikes it, and it's like now it has this power, and there's this sort of like, they can't unknow this thing that they've experienced, which I think is really fun. They also just have really great chemistry, which is, again, I feel not a given, especially in a lot of queer ships. So I appreciate that a lot. They get to be like fun and flirty and like into one another in a way that, like, yes, there is the angst, but there's the fun as well, which I think is like really nice to see. There's a lot of showing and not telling in their storyline. And then, like, as somebody who just has spent the last, like, 2 years thinking way too much about them, what I will say is, like, I love the way that they're kind of an inverse of each other's family situations. Like, and I want to talk a little bit more later about their families and April and the Wesleys and stuff, but I love the way that it's, like, Sterling is this, has been adopted into this family that
literally
that loves her, and like April, like, is biologically in this family that is like really awful. And another thing that we talk about on Pretty Little Liars a lot, apologies for people who are just listening for the Teenage Bounty Hunters and not the Pretty Little Liars, but I will just say, like, that show has this really weird relationship with biology and adoption, where it's like biology is your destiny, and like everybody who's adopted in that show is like, their life is just trauma after trauma. And it's this very weird kind of old-fashioned, like, reductive view of adoption and biology. And so I just really appreciate the way that this media kind of challenges that and is much more about the idea of, like, found and chosen family. And I really do believe that if they had had the chance to tell future stories, that would have been a major theme of those stories.
Yeah, for sure. I was trying to rack my brain for this quote, but there's this quote that I really love by Melinda Lowe, who is this really famous, like, young adult queer author. And the basis of the quote is that within your first queer relationship, what makes it so, like, special and gut-wrenching and heartwarming all at the same time is that this other person has seen you in a way that literally no other person on this world has seen you before, and like, you're sharing that. And I think visibility is so intrinsic to their relationship arc and also their character arc, and plays such an important role in the show. And I just really love that quote, because your first gay relationship will really get you.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And it's, yeah, that idea of like being seen, and that both of them are seeing this part of one another that they've never shared with anybody else. And that they're sort of, in doing that, they're sort of unmasking themselves to each other. I mean, Sterling certainly, like, because of April, is able to access in multiple ways parts of herself that she's never experienced before. Yeah. Which maybe that can lead into, like, I wanted us to talk about favorite canon moments, and then I was like, well, all of them? Is that just the answer? But, like, maybe we could talk specifically about, like, some of the scenes or some of the moments that really got to you. You talked about the pinky brushing scene, which is a great one. But, like, yeah, just some particular moments that stick out to you.
I think Sterling's revelation when the episode after she thinks about April in the supply closet. Mm-hmm. And kudos to Maddie's acting for this, but when Devin reaches across the table and is like, says something like mean and aggressive to Ezekiel, his character, like, you can, even in, like, gifts and stuff, you can see her chest and her breath visibly catch. And I was like, that is some of the most, like realistic and well-done acting for, like, young, like, horny teenager, like, queer teenagers. And I was like, that one got me particularly. And I was like, I've been there too, Sterling. Don't you worry. It doesn't stop.
It's, I think one of the things that I just in general love about Teenage Bounty Hunters is that it's like somehow extremely absurdist and extremely earnest at the same time, which is like not a combination you always get. Like there's this comedy, this heightened comedy, but there's just this sincerity to all of it. And I think that moment is such a great example. Like, she's doing some amazing physical comedy. It's really funny, but it's also really accurate. Yeah. And that's a really fun moment for sure. For sure.
This is just reminding me, I should probably just watch the show again because I haven't watched it.
We should all watch the show again. Yeah. For sure.
I think also the scene, this goes without showing, because it's probably a favorite for a lot of people, but the arcade scene when April and Sterling are talking about, like, I think it's a little bit after April does her whole monologue about being gay and tree frogs, but their flirting is just like the best because it's so nerdy too, and like
yes
I forget who says it, but something about like someone's paxilla or maxilla or like kneecap or whatever, and like the tension is so palpable. And then again, I think maybe that's just what it is, like this earnestness with the absurdity, because you can feel this tension, and then there's a kid, like, her moment, and then to them kissing in the laser tag arena. And I think that's so, like, indicative and, like, accurate of like, queer relationships when you're a teenager, but also just, like, again, bringing it back to, like, the small town, and, like, you go where you can. And, like, I'm sure this arcade is, like, you know, like, on the other side of town or, like, a little bit away, so it's not so close to, like, the ground zero of, like, you know, April's dad and their families and their community.
Yeah, well, and it's also, yeah, it's bringing an element of comedy to what is, like, ostensibly a pretty sad situation, like these two girls who like each other and can't feel like they can't be together and it has to be a secret, and here they are like making out in a laser tag arena with like vests and guns on, and it's like it's silly, it's a silly image, but it's also just like very, it's very sweet, but it's very sad, like it encompasses a lot of emotions, and I appreciate that nuance. I literally spent 20 to 25 minutes talking about the supply closet moment when we recapped that episode a year or two ago, whenever that was. So I won't launch into another tirade about that. But yes, that I love that moment for many, many, many reasons. And that actually, like, honestly, is probably maybe my favorite moment in the entire series. Not just because it's like funny and ridiculous, but also just because I think it has so much to say about like teenage girl sexuality in a way that so rarely gets its due. And it's also just like so rare for women to get to masturbate on TV. So like, I'm, you know, I'm glad that that scene is highlighted and not like treated as something weird or gross. Like it's treated as like this revelation that a character is having about herself, which I think is really exciting. I mean, as an extension of that, like the scene that you mentioned with the heavy breathing, like just Sterling's journey of horniness is so delightful throughout the series. It's so fun. You know, I love just all the little details of like when they're working on Solomon's Temple together and Sterling says that she aims to please and April says noted. And like there's a whole story playing out in those two lines that it's really just like it's such economic writing, I think, because it's like you can fill in so many blanks and many fan fiction authors, present company included, have filled in those blanks about like what those lines imply for a future for these two characters. So I really love that. Similar to their nerdy flirting in the arcade, their nerdy flirting in Spanish class, I think is a lot of fun. It's so like it's the specificity of it to those characters is great. And I mean, obviously their first kiss is, you know, such an exciting way to close out that particular episode. And their debate outside the school about like why they can or cannot continue to be involved with one another, I think is another one of those scenes that's like fun and funny and very specific to the characters and also deeply sad. Like if you listen to, you know, the things, especially that April is talking about, like she has rebuttals for every one of Sterling's points because she has done the math on this. Like she knows that her coming out is not going to be well received by her parents. And she has had a lot of time to consider that. And that's just like seeing a character, especially a character that young, carry that is really hard. And it's really pretty amazing, I think, a testament to the writing, a testament to Devin's acting, that like this is a character that we kind of hate in the first episode and we just feel so much empathy for her there. I will also say as a side note, rewatching the series, knowing what's going to happen between Sterling and April is so much fun just because they are always just like up each other's business. Like they are always so focused on one another and you're like, oh, what a rivalry. It's like, no, this is something more. This is something more than a rivalry. Did you suspect when you watched it the first time that it was going to be something more than a rivalry?
I automatically knew that April was gay. I had my very doubts impressive about Sterling, but I like, even I think it was within like the first or second scene, I was like, this girl is gay. I know it in my bones. And I think there's that really good shot of them staring at each other from across the cafeteria. And yeah. I think...
I was going to say, which one? There's so many shots of them staring at each other. But no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, the specific one where I think it's after... It's something to do with the condom that the, which, gross, has to do with April finding out Luke and Sterling's secret. But I don't know. I think it was the scene where April's hair is like wet or like a little messy.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but I was like, she's staring across at Sterling, and then Sterling looks back at her, like smirks, and then I think Ezekiel or maybe Hannah B makes a comment about like how stubborn she is, and April's like, yeah, she held a burp all through Easter Mass or Easter service, and like again, just like intercutting that tension and that spark between them with comedy, I think play just does so well for the writing and the characters. But yeah, I knew April was gay. I knew it in my heart that she was.
Like, this girl is gay. Yeah, no, that, I mean, the fact that she doesn't even, like, have a boyfriend that she's pretending to be into, I think is like pretty telling. And also just as a side note, I'm very glad for that writing choice because like I feel like we have seen so many like versions of that storyline. So I'm glad that they didn't decide to go there. But like, yeah, she's so gay. Like she's not even going to fake it with a boy. Like
she's like, so gay. She's president of the straight alliance.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I think that the construction of that character as just a giant sweet baby gay is really, but and also not so sweet, you know, sometimes not so sweet, is great. And their constant focus on one another is just really, really something. Because you're like, why is this girl so obsessed with this other girl? And why is it specifically seeming to be this, like, focus around her sex life? Like, what's going on? Well,
yeah, I feel like, not like Blair and Luke, but like all the other students of Willingham just like are like, come on, like get it together. Or like, I'm sure that like the other like closeted queer people, like their classmates are just like in like math class and be like, oh, there they go again.
yeah. I can absolutely see that. Well, and maybe we can talk a little bit about because that makes me think about, like, what I would have loved to see if we had gotten a season two. I would have loved to see that dynamic of, like, now they're, you know, friends to enemies to lovers to maybe back to enemies. And, like, just the tension of that, I think, would have been amazing. And also just speaking of other queer characters, like, bringing Ezekiel into the fold there more, I think, would have been really fun. Like, Ezekiel and Sterling interactions, more Ezekiel and April interactions. What are some of the things you would have liked to see?
I really loved Ellen's involvement. She's definitely, I know there are a lot of like fics that involve Sterling's parents, Sterling and Blair's parents, like kind of adopting April. And I really love those, but I think also it's so important. And so, like, I love when fics have Ellen supporting either April or both of them, because there's just, like, another, when it's another level of support, even, like, at a school in that, like, hostile environment, like, it means so much to, like, I know it would mean so much to those characters. I really love April and Blair's dynamic, and like,
yes,
I think for season two, like playing with the even like the comedy so much more, would just be like great, because obviously like Blair like kind of hates April's guts, but also like can't, but also she knows her sister's still in love with her, so like. I just love that dynamic between them, like the reluctant friends, and then like eventually road they're like besties.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. I think that would have been super super fun. I always love the idea of April and the Wesley family interactions. I also think, I think I've ever written a fic that does this. I've read some that have, but the idea of April like joining the bounty hunting team, I think is also very fun. April and Bowser, I think would be a very, I would have loved to see those two characters play off of each other. And I also just another layer of tension, right? If Sterling and April were working together and, you know, having all that tension. I think, like, one of the other things that I think is so fun about them is this idea that they, even when they're, like, they don't particularly like one another, they work really well together. You know, we see that when they're on the debate team and when they're working on Solomon's Temple. And I think that that is so fun, right? It's like you sort of want to hate this person, but, like, they're kind of... You guys kind of have this like weird symbiosis where like you bounce off each other really well and other people take notice of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of switching gears a little bit. Going away from April and Sterling's relationship,
this might be obvious, but exploring Sterling and April, Sterling and Blair's relationship in season two, I think was probably the next anticipated thing, obviously, with the last episode and that big reveal and how that changes the dynamic of what their sister relationship is like, but also with their parents.
Yes, I totally agree. And there are a million different directions they could have gone with that, which I think is really fun. Just the complexity of this family, and like there is a lot of love there, but also like obviously a lot of trust has been broken. And like one of the things that I think is really, you know, like makes you so much want more after that finale is like so many people are keeping different secrets from other people. You know, Sterling mm-hmm. doesn't, or you know, Sterling is now discovering about her parentage. Their parents don't know that they've been bounty hunting. You know, April doesn't know that Sterling brought her father in. Like, they're, everybody has these different scraps of information, and it's fun to think about like how those would have unfolded. And I trust that they would have unfolded in really interesting, creative ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any like particular kind of headcanons about really any of the characters on the show? Like things that you just believe about them, even if the show didn't say them or not? Or maybe something you picked up from a fic or whatever.
I really love the idea. I mean, it's so obvious, but that Sterling has anxiety, and like post season one, like immediately starts going to a therapist. I've seen a lot of fics where either Sterling or April goes into lawyering or like social welfare because of what happened, or like even politics because of what happened in their childhoods. So I'd like to believe that. I don't know if this is controversial. I know there's like some fics where Blair also ends up being bi or like unlabeled, but I don't know. I kind of think she's straight, but like with the worst taste in men. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that, you know, enthusiastic ally, almost like reluctantly straight, you know, I can kind of see that. Yeah. I can also see a version where she's queer. I mean, I think most media is better if you just headcanon everybody is queer, but, I like those a lot. I mean, one of my favorites always is that April is very into musical theater, because I'm also very into musical theater. And I just always think that Sterling can't cook. I don't know why. That's just a thing I decided about her. And I mean, I'm not saying like I originated that or anything, but like it's a thing I believe about her. But it is fun, like, one of the things that I think is really fun about the fics that have been written about them is that they explore them at so many different stages of their life. And so it's fun to imagine different like elements of their development, like when they might crop up or not, when they're, you know, maybe more confident at a certain point or more less confident if they're younger, you know, whatever. I think it's fun to imagine that. This is like, maybe, I don't know if this is a controversial take. I think that, if I were going to be, like, giving advice to the characters as, like, an older person giving advice to them if they were real people, like, I actually think they should go and, like, date other people. Like, I don't, before they, you know, come back together. Like, I don't think that they... I do like they are definitely an OTP. I like the idea that they do like eventually end up together. But I think like it's good to, you know, sow your oats a little bit. And so I like the idea that they maybe would reunite at some point down the line.
Oh, yeah. And I think like that maybe that makes the like their relationship even more special, because I've definitely read like maybe even like some of your fics too, that like they go off and date other people, they go to college, but then like their tentative friendship or something is still there brewing under the surface that has been for years and years and years. And for them to eventually be at an emotionally healthy place and to rediscover that joy and love for each other after they've been with other people and have experienced love with those people, but ultimately hasn't worked out because they are meant to be together. I think that's like so important and so special.
Yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, it's so funny because PLL fans will know that like Joanna and I pretty much, if there's like two women on the screen, we'll find a way to ship them. Like we are both proud multi-shippers. Like we definitely have our preferences, but like we're like, I think a lot of shows, especially shows where like characters are constantly breaking up and getting back together, like it is more fun to be a multi-shipper. It's less heartbreaking. And with April and Sterling, I just can't do it. Like, I can do it from the standpoint of, like, I do think they should date other people. But, like, in terms of, like, oh, envisioning the future for them, I just see them together. Like, it's, they did too good a job of writing this ship. Like, they're too shippable. I just, you know, I want them to end up together. Like,
yeah,
that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we talked about that. Like, I think what's a thing that's really interesting is like the staying power of them is that like, yes, it's been a couple of years and like I've written an absurd amount of words about them in 2022. Like, I don't know why, but like there is something about them that has this staying power. Like what is that? What is that X factor process? And it's okay if you don't have an answer, because I don't know that I totally have one either.
I think for whatever reason, I think having the show being released in August, I think, of 2020, obviously the producers and the writers didn't know what was going to happen, like, within the pandemic and the world. But I think, like, that really aided them.
I totally agree.
Especially because we, at least in the United States, had this wave of, during quarantine, people figuring out their sexuality for the first time, and a lot of people coming out. And I think, like, I know I did, but once you come out, you gravitate for the, like, first piece of, like, media that you can, like, with, like, desperate clawing, like, fingertips. And I think that, that really helped them. And also just like I really have to hand it like to the cast, not only like Devin and Maddie and I'm blanking on the actress who plays Blair, but like,
oh, Angelica.
Yes, Angelica, thank you. I feel so bad.
It's okay, they're not listening to this podcast.
The three of them, but also just like the ensemble of characters, I think audiences, especially queer audiences, are so receptive and notice when so much love is being put into a show. And I think the genuineness was there. And I think that is something that continuously draws people back to the story, because it's not only genuine, but so authentic, and so real for so many people.
I completely agree. I think that the timing, it was, I mean, really like the best of times and the worst of times, right? And for the show, it probably didn't help its chances of getting a season two, just because like so many shows were canceled because of COVID. But I do think that it provided this kind of like lifeline during a super uncertain feeling time. And like, there's almost this element of like a trauma bond, I think, of like, we kind of all trauma bonded to the show a little bit. Not that that's the reason why people like it, because there's like, it's a wonderful show in its own right. But you know, it's there is something about like a show that gets you through a tough time or that helps you get through a tough time. There's also just, you know, it's one season. It was unfairly canceled. Like the underdog nature of it, I think, like makes the people who love it super, super passionate. And I think like there's not a huge fandom. There aren't like so many fics being written about it, but there are, I think the people who do interact with the fandom are just really, really into it and really like seem to be fairly respectful, which is not true of every fandom, and seem to be just really into the characters and into the actors in a way that I would like to think is largely healthy. I don't know if I'm the best judge of that, just considering how much of my life I've spent thinking about them. But it's just kind of, I think it, yeah, it's unique. It's like this little kind of, I had someone write a really sweet comment on one of my fics about them one time that was something about it providing a safe space, that the fandom was providing a safe space. And I do think that that's true to a certain extent, that it provides this kind of, yeah, safe space for people.
Yeah, going back a little bit, you said, like, the whole trauma bonding thing. I remember, like, reading, what is it called? I remember reading, like, two fics by, I think, Paddington Fan 69. Mm-hmm. Classics. Oh, my God.
I'm familiar.
Changed my life. But I remember reading them at work, and, like, again, like, this was, like, a couple months before the 2020 election. And then I actually did like a little like NaNoWriMo, like for the Stepbrol fic that I wrote. And I ended up writing it in like 9,000 words in 3 days because I was so stressed. But like,
oh my goodness.
And it was like, early November, so very close to the elections, but
yeah,
it was just so like almost cathartic because I don't know, I don't think there are many shows where I could have done that with, because I like I said before, like Carmilla was a show that I really latched on to, but then also I'm familiar with like Supergirl and we don't have to get into that. But like other shows like Atypical and stuff like that, and most recently The Wilds. I really think that like, a lot of my enthusiasm from Teenage Bounty Hunters like kind of drift into the next show that I discovered, which was The Wilds, because I had always wanted to write fic, but was often like intimidated. I also like found when I found Carmilla, I was not pretty young, but I was like 17, and definitely felt like I wouldn't be able, and I never thought I could write fic for Supergirl because just like the presence of all of these amazing authors, I never felt like I could, do justice to these characters. But like, obviously, as I've gotten older and gotten more experience, but just like being on the other side of the age of like these characters, like I don't know. It was just something that like I think the first. The fic that I wrote for this show was like the longest thing I'd ever written, like up until that point. Like I think I had two fics for Atypical that were like under one, like they were around 1,000 to 2,000 words each. But then like this show came along and like 9,000 words in 3 days, you know? And I think that it's really special and like a testament to the show that like there are still people who are writing fics to like almost 2.5 years later. And like that's just amazing. And like I've also asked myself that I can't remember the last time I watched the show, but I still read people's fics. Like I get the emails in my inbox and I'm like excited and I follow along and I think that's really special.
Yeah, it's I totally know what you mean when you said like 9,000 words came out and you're like, how did that happen? Because I've had that happen a lot with this show. Yes, I think that it's a great sort of springboard for fic writing and like fandom interpretation, whatever you want to call it, because the characters were left in such an interesting place and there was so much like so much that was unresolved, but so much that it felt like was going to become resolved, you know? But it's also not like being in the PLL fandom and writing a lot of PLL fics, it's like so much of the process of writing fic for that show is fixing canon and like being like, this thing was awful. And like, this was like a terrible, like transphobic plot twist. So let's try to like rewrite that. And it's like that, you know, I love that. I have written many, many PLL fics. I've spent a ridiculous amount of hours of my life talking about Pretty Little Liars. Obviously I'm invested, but like, it feels good sometimes to step into a fandom space where it's not like you're having to undo all of these plot twists of canon or like fix it so much as like invest further in the story. And I think that is really fun. Not to totally put you on the spot, but do you have like a favorite line that you wrote or a favorite section that you wrote of your Stepril fic?
I started rereading what I wrote, but then I stopped.
I get that.
I think we said before that line where Sterling kind of says like, I like to please, and April like noting that. I definitely played with that in a scene where they're continuing to make out heavily in the car in the parking lot. And I just think like I remember even like working out the physicality of like being in a small cramped space. Like I remember like acting it out so I knew where everyone's like, arms were and legs were.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I just like I realized a couple, maybe like a year or two ago, that I really do well writing anxious characters. And I think Sterling's inner dialogue, because I wrote the fic that I wrote from Sterling's point of view, and I think her internal dialogue is, I really like writing that and writing her reactions to April, because it's so easy to me and like her earnestness and her like apprehension, but also just like genuine feelings for April and just like in general was really fun to write.
I completely understand that. Having written from both of their points of view, I think for like one of the things for me is I realize that I see a lot of myself in both of those characters. And so there is this kind of, you know, when it feels like you can kind of get into somebody's headspace from a little bit of a natural extension of yourself, or like it just can be, you know, when it's easier to access somebody's point of view, that is really that can feel really fulfilling and really gratifying, right? To be able to like tap into a voice like that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I will try to talk a little bit about my own fic without getting too embarrassed. The reason that I'm doing this is just because I like hearing other people talk about their writing, and so other, you know, perhaps people might feel the same. But yeah, I try not to play favorites with my fics because they are all my children and I love them all. That being said, I do have a particular fondness for, I do like the long shot fic where April is running for president. That is a favorite one of mine. And yes. Oh, this, by the way, feel no pressure to comment on this. This is not me fishing for compliments. I mean, you can if you want to, but like, I'm just talking. And I do really like the fic where Sterling has amnesia, just because I'd never written anything like that before. And it was an interesting opportunity to kind of, it was like a really interesting puzzle writing that particular fic. And yeah, I had a lot of fun with that one. Anytime I can write about like April and the Wesleys or any of like the Wesley family relationships, I enjoy that a lot. And I like the little universe that is the, Isn't It Just So Pretty, which obviously is named after the Taylor Swift song Invisible String, which is obviously a song that was written about Stepbril. I don't know if other people have listened to this. Yes. Yes. Anyway, that, and I actually, just as a brief side note, I do think that the release of Folklore right around the release of Teenage Bounty Hunters was like a very symbiotic thing. I feel that those, I mean, just look at the fic titles alone, like half of them are Taylor Swift songs. Because we're nothing but gay and predictable, I guess. But yeah, so those are some that I really enjoy. And yeah, and I like putting them in different scenarios. I think that they're characters that like it's really fun to think about how they might react to one another in different scenarios. I also admire anytime somebody writes about the bounty hunting part of things, because like I loved that part of the show. I love reading about it. I have very little interest or ability in writing it. So whenever somebody can get into that, I really admire that. Sorry. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, I really love fics that, I guess, not canon compliant, but canon adjacent.
Yeah.
Like, especially exploring, like, you know, a kind of faux, like, season two, what would have happened. But specifically, like, I don't know, I feel like when people write alternate universes for characters, it's to put them in more interesting, maybe, or different situations. But I think there's so much that of the season one plot that lends itself to like all these different avenues, like you said. That so I've read like a few AUs, but I really think the best like fics can shine when they're tied to the universe that has already been created. And I think that's, again, is another testament to the writing of the show.
I completely agree. I think that is a great point. This is like something that I also like. I enjoy AU fics. I think like when somebody finds a way to like make characters still feel completely in character in an AU fic, that's a really impressive skill. But this, like, part of what I think makes Teenage Bounty Hunter so fun is the complexity of the characters and the complexity of their relationships and their histories. And so I think it's like, it's hard to recreate that in an AU. It's not impossible. It can be done, but it's like, it's hard to do that in a way where it still holds the same emotional resonance that canon had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any like favorite fics or favorite authors or favorite scenes from a particular fic that you want to shout out? It's fine if not. Okay. Yes.
Like I said before, Paddington Fan 69, specifically their fix, Hard Ask, which is like this really wonderfully developed April character study. And then also Ain't It Shocking, which is kind of like, again, like canon adjacent fic to Sterling discovering herself after season one. And also Full Control by Morning Sound 15, I think, is also a really good one. And The Thing About Illicit Affairs, which, again, another Taylor Swift by Kelsey O, I believe, is a great one. And also, I was not paid to say this, but also all of your fics.
Thank you. The check's in the mail. sorry, go ahead.
Pay off my student loans. but I really just, like, I just get drawn, like, again and again back to, like, the what-ifs of the show. And I think, like, what we talked about before, the staying power of the show is those what-ifs. And that makes the fan fiction so wonderfully in-depth and creative and really allows people to shine. But, yeah, you can also just go on to AO3 and, you know, do the top hits or top kudos, whatever you want to do, and find great ones that way as well.
For sure. Oh yeah. I co-sign all of those. I think those are great. Also I'll just add just like quick run through. And I actually last night went in and book, I was like, why don't I have more of these bookmarked? So bookmark feature on AO3, good feature to use. But I'm on the Outside Looking Through by Salty Pistachio is a really like fic that made me nervous because it seemed to be playing with the idea of Blair and April as a couple, but is so well written. Really love it a lot. Sentimental Tunes, Other Side of the Door is great. All the fics by T15 are lovely. Yeah, just really, really talented people in this fandom, dedicated people in this fandom. And I think like a thing that is kind of amazing to me is that it's like all of the fics virtually outside of, I want to say a handful of them, are about one canon queer ship, which I feel like you don't get a ton of just in various other fandoms. Supercorp, just as you know, random thing off the top of my head that means nothing. I just brief side note, I have no bone to pick with Supercorp. I've never watched a full episode of Supergirl, so I actually have like I have no investment. I've just heard things, you know. Things have reached me. But no, anyway, I think that's amazing that there are so many people interested in exploring so many stories about these characters that are actually like a canon queer ship. I think that's really cool.
And I think it also, obviously it's an ensemble cast, but again, like April and Sterling are so in tune with each other that there's really no one else, at least season one. And like, I mean, even like, and I feel, and I'll give kudos to the writers for not like bringing in another like third party, because like that happens so many times. Like I can count easily like on two, like one to two hands where it's like, oh, the their relationship is questioned, let's throw in this like new very conveniently attractive and like works really well with one of the pairings of the ship and like cause using that as plot instead of like character. I think character driven plot, which I think the show does really well.
Oh, I completely agree. I think that it's, and it speaks to me, like, it speaks to a confidence in the writing that it's like, no, we don't need to throw in another character for conflict. I mean, maybe that would have come up in season two, and even I think could have been a fun element of season two if it was played in a you know, interesting way. But which also, and I had talked about this at the time that we did our TBH miniseries, but like another way I think you see that confidence is in the way that the show ends, because I think a lot of shows would have ended with, you know, you hear a gunshot and you don't know who's been shot, kind of thing. But instead they actually end with an emotional cliffhanger where it's like, yes, you know that everybody is physically safe, but oh my God, this big revelation. And they have enough confidence that you know the characters enough at this point to know that like, that's what's going to hit hardest, right?
Yes. Yes, for yeah. sure.
So I love that. I think that it's like we all have, you were kind of talking about this earlier, like we all have a ship or a series of ships that really grab us. For me, as like a young queer teen, it was Britannia, like, and I've talked about Britannia on this show. yes. Yes. Just a lot of feelings about that. A lot of feelings about that.
I was a little, I think, young. Like, obviously, I was alive when Glee was coming out, but I didn't really watch it until later, and then kind of like not hate watched it, but watched it with a grain of salt because it's Glee. But I specifically remember looking up the scene where Brittany and Santana hold hands under the napkin at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. That like fundamentally changed me. That I think that was like one of the big like moments where I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I was so emotionally distraught by the scene where Santana confesses her love to Brittany in front of the locker. I literally stayed home from school the next day. yeah. It was like, what is this? This is a normal level of investment in a storyline, right? So yes, for sure. But anyway, like I think we don't choose the ship that grabs our hearts. Like the ship kind of chooses us. It's like a puppy at a pound or something. And so like I was really stunned by how much this particular ship grabbed hold of my heart. But I'm glad that it did. You know, I've met some really cool people, and I've gotten to like write and have people read my writing, which always feels good. And I just, it's brought joy to me. I think it's brought, you know, the show has obviously brought joy to a lot of other people too. So yeah, I'm grateful that this particular pound puppy chose me, I guess I'll put it that way.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think one of the things that's so fun about them is like they're characters who enjoy one another. And that is not always something that you see with ships. And so I really appreciate that.
Like, yeah, like are they really enemies to lovers? Because they're really not.
I know they like April would like to think that they're enemies to lovers. Sterling just thinks that they're like estranged friends the whole time, I think. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah. these characters. I know.
They have the stuff, the X factor, whatever it is. Is there any more that you would like to say about the show or these characters or writing or anything?
I think any others that you're involved in, just like, I know a lot of people say just do it, but like even one of the things that I really had to grapple with, especially as I started writing more fics, was getting myself to write, but then also for the right reasons. Like, I really, like, you shouldn't, like, yes, the comments and the kudos feels, like, good at the end of the day, but, like, you really need to I think as a testament to the characters and to yourself, write for yourself and like,
yes, for sure.
Write the characters in situations that you feel authentic that they would be in, but also like authentic for yourself. Not only to like write them the best that they can, but then also obviously to be able to put a little bit of yourself in them, in the characters. And I think that is really what harbors some of the best writing, at least for me. I don't know about anyone else, but it really seems to work, which is great.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think like inspiration is like the weirdest, most intangible thing. I think like it just like it's like a butterfly that you kind of try to chase down, and then sometimes it just like lands on you and you don't know why. And so I think like following that when you can and like having fun with it. Like, I think like, I know that that is so like, just have fun with it, but like, do like, it is especially something like this. That's like, you are literally writing for yourself. This is not writing that you're going to profit off of. This is not writing that you're going to like sell to a publisher. This is like writing for you and like the people in the fandom that interact with it. And so like, there's, you really have nothing to lose by just kind of having a good time and writing the things that you want to write about. And yeah, and like my experience with the Teenage Bounty Hunters fandom in particular is that it is an incredibly kind fandom. And and also the other thing I would just say is like, please comment on Fix. Like, your local authors really appreciate that. So like, that is an awesome thing. Or, you know, kudos, like all of those things are like highly, highly appreciated. So, yeah, it's a fun fandom. I'm glad that it's not, that it like continues to, I don't know if thrive, maybe that's a little intense, but like that it continues to exist is, is really, really awesome. Can I just like speed round ask you about the Wilds? Because I have been,
Yes.
no shade at all to Joanna, but I've been trying to get her to watch The Wilds for like 2 years so we can talk about it on this podcast. And
we can even do a whole separate episode. I'd be so
down. Okay. Just for the listeners at home, the way that Jamie just like sprung into attention was like really, really lovely. So just like, yeah, who are your favorites?
I don't know all of them, but I, in the same way that I knew April was gay, I have been Aaliyah's like fan from day one.
Okay.
I never did, but I would say in a lot of ways that I resonated with April and Sterling. Obviously Shelby is like, I think again, a very important character, and her storyline is super important. And also the representation with like Rachel, because I swam collegiately have been involved in sports like all my life, and like that representation not only of the culture of sports, but like the harmful culture and like like discussions of like eating disorders, especially for like women and like Black women in athletics, I think is super important. I love Fatten. I came into the Wilds shipping Tony and Shelby, and have since not moved on, but have migrated to shipping Leah and Fatten, mostly from this is a shout out to comment on the author's fix that you read, because I essentially bullied one of my very good friends who is probably one of the most active writers in the Leah and Fatten community. I basically like commented on her fic and then went to her Tumblr and messaged her and be like, hey, let's be friends. And like, now we literally talk every day, like we text, like it's crazy. So shout out to Liv. I will make you listen to this podcast, but I think I really love Tony and Shelby, but I think Fatten and Leah have, again, this what if, and like this intimacy of knowing each other from their previous life, but then not really knowing each other, and the way that they depend on each other either on the island or after the island, I think is really special. And like, I would argue that they're actually like a enemies to lovers type of ship versus like April and Sterling, maybe not so much. And even like Tony and Shelby, I would say, I think, yes, I think they had tension. Like, obviously that wasn't friendly, but I don't know. There's just something that like hits different about Leah and Fatten that I really keep coming back to. And I think a lot of people in the fandom come back to. And then it's also just so great because there's, at least for season one, there was a cast of eight wonderfully written female characters, and you really had that group dynamic and like found family as a trope is so strong. I think that is something that always draws me back into that show. And so I think I mentioned this before, but my enthusiasm for Teenage Bounty Hunters dripped into the Wilds, and so they kind of became a conglomeration of the two, and now I just can't live without either of them and think about them all the time.
That's awesome. I will share my thoughts on this in a moment, but I want to ask you, what did you think of the inclusion of the boys in season two?
I've heard a lot of perspectives. I think there was a lot of, especially like fandom pushback, and I would say even like vitriol and like hate towards the male actors, which I think is unnecessary, especially towards the I was never, from a like pragmatic point of view, adding another eight characters doesn't make a lot of sense to me, like screen time wise, but I think it is, well, I think it is in character for Gretchen, and I think it is necessary for the plot. Not necessary in the sense that like this had to happen, but I think it is one of the avenues that the show took or could take and has since took to make their point about what female empowerment and like what society expects from not only young teen girls but also teen boys. I think the use of the screen time for the boys could have been handled a lot better. I think that is the general consensus. I would have liked to see their characters fleshed out a lot more. I think one of the reasons why the fandom was so drawn to season one was that the characters were so well written and portrayed by their actors. But then also there's such a sense of community and found family within the island, and it's kind of hard to see that on the boys' island. So I wasn't necessarily rooting for them as a collective. Maybe I was rooting for like individual boys, but overall, I just didn't have that spark with the original girls. But I am, if the show is picked up for season three, I am very interested in what direction they will take.
I agree with a lot of what you said. First of all, never necessary to send actors hate for things that the characters are doing. They are not in charge of that. I think it for me, it came down to screen time. I also just think that, like, they really hit the jackpot with, like, I think one of the best and most underrated ensembles on TV with that initial cast of female actresses. And it was, like, trying to, like, you know, win the lottery twice. And I just don't think that they not, which is not to say that, like, oh, this, the cast of male actors is bad at all. I just think that, like you said, they didn't have the space to, like, flesh them out as much. And so some of that, like, lived in chemistry didn't really have the chance to flourish in the same way. I wasn't particularly, I was like, I liked all of the characters in season one, but I wasn't like, and I liked Tony and Shelby obviously as a couple, but like, I wasn't coming at it from like a super shippy perspective, I guess. I was like, I just really love these friendships. I really love the characters. And then something happened in season two. And I was like, this Leah Fatten thing, like, what's up with this? What's going on here? And I would still say that I watch it as like a fan of the friendships first and the shipper second. But I don't know what happened with season two, but like, because I feel like textually it's kind of there, but there's also just this, like, I don't know, it's like this energy that the actresses are bringing to it or something, where it's like suddenly their dynamic seems very, just very shippable to me. And I wonder if you have thoughts on that at all.
Yes, my friend that I mentioned before, Liv, she introduced me into the world of Leah and Fatten, but also like the wonderful actress and human being that Sophia Ali is. And I want to say, and obviously Sarah as well, I also really love her. But I know that, she was made aware of I think Leah and Fatten's dynamic and also Fatten's like fluid sexuality. It's like around season one. And I think just something with her, the way that Sophia's character, like the way that Fatten looks at Leah in season two.
Yes.
Her eyes are doing the most like acting I've ever seen. And it's just like, for me, it's about like, Fatten never having romantic love before, being like not broken, but being like essentially like not reduced either, but like her essence is almost yearning after Leah in a sense, and I think she and vulnerable. And obviously that plays into like her kind of role as like a caretaker for the whole group, but she's so earnest and really like, I wouldn't say blindly trusts Leah, but trusts her with a lot of important information to be trusted, not only like within the island, but also, you know, like with Leah's own mental health and her vulnerability with that. And then on the flip side, like, Leah obviously was in the whole, like, Jeff situation and really was hurt and used by someone, and, like, them finding that each other and, like, that dynamic of, like, we've either haven't felt this before or we've been hurt before, and, like, acknowledging that, but then being willing to try again for the sake of relationship. And I think that's so special.
Yeah, I think that there's something also just very special about this idea of like Fatten kind of becoming obsessed with this sort of conspiracy that she sort of rejected in Leah, like earlier in the series. Like, I think that it's like, that's kind of I feel like that's kind of a trope, but it's like a trope that, again, like when it's deployed effectively, is very effective. And I mean, I just adore Fatten as a character. I think she's like one of the best characters on TV right now. And I agree, like, the heart eyes are just, like, they're intense. They're, like, intense heart eyes that she just, like, shines through the screen. Yeah, it's just, it is a very interesting, it's an interesting thing. I hope that they are given the chance to explore that dynamic more. In your heart of hearts, this might be a controversial question. In your heart of hearts, do you foresee the relationship becoming canon or not?
I could see avenues in which they would kiss. I also see avenues where they would try to set either one of the girls up with one of the boys from the island, which
sure.
I think I would be more frustrated if that happened. I would rather that not happen than Leah and Fatten to be canon, if that makes sense.
Like, totally.
Especially because, like, with non-canon queer ships, like, it's all based on subtext and audience interpretation. But I think it would be a disservice to the characters that they have created so far to just kind of push one of them off with the boys. I think if either, like, Kieran or, like, Roth, like, I don't think that is, at least from my perspective, true to their characters and, like, what I choose to believe about their characters, which is supported obviously through canon, but also, like, within my own head. I don't think realistically that could happen, honestly, especially the way that Fatten is at the end of season two. And even, like, that overlay of Ben Folds, how did they get him? But like, Ben
most Folds, unexpected guest star, yeah.
Yeah, like, his voiceover of, like, telling Leah, like, the voices we love, like, never, like, leaving us. And then, like, someone, like, I think, is it Leah's scream that Fatten hears? Or, like, or vice versa. It's so coded, but also, I don't necessarily trust the writers to do them justice. Like, I think that comes from, like, being hurt before, obviously, from, like, other shows with queer representation, but also just, I think they could do it really well, or I think if they were to not make them canon, but still, like, have this really deep relationship, and then have, like, If we, the audience, could still, like, interpret it as romantic and still have moments like this without it being, like, canon in the show, I think I would still be as happy as I would be if they were canon, but, like, a little less well-written, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I will take whatever option does not force me to have to hear the word queer bait a million times over the next season. I'm just kidding. that's a whole other podcast. I pretty much agree with your take. I don't need them to be canon. I mean, my God, I'm a PLL fan. I have a lot of experience in, like, headcanoning characters as queer who the show refuses to acknowledge are queer.
They're canon to us. That's what
they're
matters.
They're canon to us. They're canon to the people who know. But anyway.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for the little wild aside. Any like, burning hot, wild hot takes that you want to, like, get out there while you're, you know, officially on the air?
Thinking. I don't know why the only one that comes to my head is Dot definitely needs glasses. I don't know how that came up, but I know this is a pretty popular take, but I think they really short-sighted Shannon's character and, like, didn't really utilize Dot in a way that I think was good for her character in season two. And I would like them to explore that more. And I just love all of the girls and will continue to be thinking about them for the rest of my life. Oh, also, I think, I don't know, I feel, okay, my friend Liv, she clowned me for this, but I actually got a tattoo for the Wild. Little eight on my wrist.
Sweet.
It's actually written in Liv's handwriting, which is cute. Because it's also a testament to our friendship because we met through the show. In the same way that Teenage Bounty Hunters is so, I think, so wonderful, and there's really, like, no other words to describe, like, what this show means to me, and especially, like, finding it during quarantine and, like, when, like, obviously the world was, like, going through a really hard time, and, like, me personally was also having a really, like, hard time with my mental health, like, it's just also, I think season one is such a good show.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good. And yeah, that's all I have to say.
I love that. I think friendships I love so many things that, like, being in Pretty Little Liars fandom has brought me, but absolutely the greatest has been my friendship with Joanna. So, like, having the way that fandom can, like, create friendships and bring people together, I think it's, like, the best thing about them. Season one is amazing. Actually, little brief story about me and season one of The Wilds, which is that right around the time that season one came out, I got a concussion and I was not supposed to be watching anything, but I was like one episode. Yes. Yeah. Yes. The internet knows of my concussion. I was not supposed to be watching anything. And like, I was like one or two episodes away from the end of The Wild. So I remember literally waiting to leave to go to the emergency room, watching the finale, being like, some part of my brain being like, I know I'm not supposed to be watching this, but I have to know what happens. And yeah, like, the doctor had not officially told me not to watch anything yet. So I was like, I feel like, even though I know I shouldn't be, I feel like, I haven't officially been given like doctor's orders for brain rest yet. So anyway, just a little story about like that. That is how captivating that first season is, that like I potentially put my brain at risk to finish the season, which probably maybe isn't something to be proud of. I don't know. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I think we have covered a lot today. Is there anything else you'd like to share or discuss before we sign off for today?
Very last note. You mentioned the staying power of fandom, and I think specifically within like the Supergirl fandom or the Supercorp fandom, like I remember. One, because I wasn't writing fic at the time, but I really remember, like, wanting friends within fandom, or, like, I wanted people that I could talk to that weren't in my real life, that, like, didn't get, like, obviously the friends that I have in real life are very wonderful, but, like, sometimes when you just need to, like, nerd out in like the very like hyper fixated like way that like on like fandom culture like allows you to do, I always wanted that, and I never felt like I could like get it with, because, and also like, you know, like, but I think that's just the like a testament to like being able to reach out to people. And like whether that be like commenting on like fics that people have written or like, or just like I don't know if like spam liking is like an option, but like obviously like reaching out to people within the fandom that you find like funny or just like think that you would have a good conversation with about like characters or like a scene, I think is so important. And then like I think that really has helped me also stay with shows like Teenage Bounty Hunters or The Wilds, because there were, especially with The Wilds, there were many times where I like life got in the way and I just had other priorities but like through like the people that I knew in the fandom like kept coming back to the show, which I think is just so special. So I just want to shout out to like making friends in the fandom, which is so great.
I completely agree. And I think, yeah, I think that like that is kind of one of the blessings of like a smaller fandom sometimes, is that it's like everybody kind of knows everybody. Like there's kind of there can be sometimes less, I don't know, less pressure or less like of a status thing or whatever. Like it's just nice. I mean, like Pretty Little Liars was pretty much dead and gone. I mean, it was by the time we started this podcast, it was on its last legs when I was writing fic for it. So it was like, that was not an active fandom really to be a part of. And I met some lovely people along the way, but yeah, it is really nice to be able to connect with people who like are in real time excited about the thing that you're excited about and want to talk to you about it and want to, yeah, like you said, hyperfixate, because like there are definitely people who just like, I don't know. I feel like someday somebody will do a study on this of like the fandom gene and how like some people get it and some people don't, because I for sure have so many friends in real life, I have a lot of friends in real life who are like people I adore and can talk to about anything, but they just don't have whatever the thing is that makes me be like, I need to go read a bunch of fan fiction about this thing, you know? So it's like, yeah, it's just some people have it and some people don't. And it's nice to have like a mixture of people in your life who understand that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I
agree. Yeah. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today. If anybody out there has thoughts on anything that we talked about, or also ideas of other like single bonus episodes that potentially could come out in the next little bit, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify at everybodyaeverybodygay. You can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it.
You should.
Thank you. Take care.